From the Lynn to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of May, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM, Giovanni Prezafontes, agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois for Extension, and then the Department of Crop Sciences will join us to discuss the growing season so far in the state of Illinois and that maybe ragged cornfield you have out there. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast too. We'll do that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is online on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Greg. Thanks so much. It is such a busy week in agriculture. Of course, the WASD figures were out yesterday morning. E15 is happening on Capitol Hill. The president is in China. And tomorrow morning, the CONAB, or agency out of Brazil, will update their numbers. And I missed the big news yesterday, frankly, when I was looking at the markets, that wheat just rallied like a son of a gun, though it did not manage to have any follow-through to speak of during the day trade today so far. What happened there?
Well, first of all, the USDA lowered the yield significantly. It's one of the lowest yields that they've had. Hard red winter wheat yields out west. It's primarily the Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado area that they lower the yields by as much as 30% in some of those states. And not only did they lower the yield, but there's a lot of abandoned acres. So they dropped the acreage number. So you had a big reduction in production due to the lower acres and the lower yield. Soft red, on the other hand, those numbers look pretty good. If you look at the weekly crop ratings, Illinois, everything in the east of the Mississippi River is in the 70% good to excellent category. By contrast, the western state, that hard red winter wheat area, 20-25%. The best is about 30% good to excellent. So a big difference between hard red winter wheat conditions and soft red winter wheat conditions. And hard red did have some follow through. We've been, I think, 25 cents either side of unchanged today on the hard red. You're right. The soft red has not had any follow through at all. But the hard red, the jury, I think, is still out on just how much damage has been done and how, you know, did the government get all the reduction or will they, you know, reduce it in upcoming reports? So still a little bit of uncertainty on the hard red, but that was definitely the fireworks yesterday in the wheat market.
I suppose the good news for Will Ag is that we've been talking about a big abandonment number out west for a couple, 2 or 3 weeks now. So maybe a buy the rumor, sell the fact kind of thing could have taken place for a few folks out there. What did you think of the numbers for corn and soybeans that USDA put out? They were pretty on par.
Pretty on par. Yeah, I think there's some underlying support. You can find some reason for support in the corn market. The bean market, it all comes down to, you know, is China going to buy more beans from us? I just don't think we can expand domestic crush fast enough to offset the you know, the bigger production numbers in soybeans. But in corn, not only are we looking at less corn here already based on the numbers, but if you take the dry conditions in the southeast United States, the dry conditions in the southwest United States, not calling for a disaster, but even if we shave a few bushels off of the national yield combined with maybe a little bit of acreage number when the new number comes out on June 30th, you can make an argument that the corn ending stocks number could get, I don't want to say tight, but certainly smaller than where government's projecting it today. And then you throw on top of that, world stocks, world corn stocks are the tightest they've been in over 7 years. And again, we're not running out of corn, but it just tightens everything up, and it just makes the emphasis that we definitely need to have a pretty good corn crop, something close to average. It doesn't have to be a bumper crop, but if we can grow an average crop, that should keep us going for another year. But if we have any kind of hiccups at all, things could get interesting this summer.
I take it that has you halting new crop corn sales potentially, and then for soybeans, maybe actually trying to add on to what you've already put in place?
Yeah, depending on where a farmer is, there's nothing wrong, I don't think, with making some catch-up sales. This is the highest price we've had. I think we're within a dime of the contract highs, and you have to go back almost a year before we've had these kind of prices. So, I think we can make money at these prices on soybeans. We have to remember the funds are about the second or third longest that they've ever been. And if they do decide to get out for whatever reason, a disappointing Xi Trump meeting, more acres, whatever the story is. I'm reminded back to that third week of March when the funds decided to get out for one day and we were down the 70-cent limit. So not to say that we can't go higher, but if and when the funds do decide to bail out, we could lose quite a bit in the bean market especially. So, yeah, I think farmers want to take a good hard look at where they're at on their sales. And, if they're not to where they want to be, close to 50%, may not be a bad idea to get a few more beans sold at these levels.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have news from the President Trump, President Xi meeting to discuss, and maybe some soybean sales. We'll see during Commodity Week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Giovanni Prezafontes from the Department of Crop Sciences, an agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, the University of Illinois with Extension, now joins us to talk about the early planting season for corn and soybeans across the state. Hi, Giovanni. You have written an article for the Farm Doc website. This is actually in Crop Central, so you go to farmdoc.illinois.edu and then look in sections for field crops, and it should pop up, or you can just search for your name, Giovanni Prezafontes. I'm sure you'll find it that way as well. Anyway, your discussion surrounds what the beginning of the growing season has been like for this 2026 crop year. What can you tell me about it?
Yeah, hey, Todd. First of all, thanks for having me. What I did on this article that we posted yesterday morning, it was just a quick update on corn planting progress and thinking a little bit about yield prospects as we move into April. I think a lot of people are starting to get anxious about planting. But before we get there, yeah, I just did a quick review on the USDA NAS reports. And I think we're all familiar with the case that we're way ahead of schedule, especially for soybeans. If you actually look on the first NAS report back in early April, for the first 2 or 3 weeks, we saw a lot of the soybean was planted before corn. And I think if we use that NAS data to kind of help answer the question if you should plant corn and soybean first, I think a lot of the farmers are kind of thinking about planting soybean first. But as of May 10, if you look at the USDA report, about 57% of the soybean was planted by May 10th. That was up 11% from the previous week. So you can see that the planting progress is kind of keeping that pace. Well ahead of the five-year average. When you look at the five-year average between 2021 and 2025. And then on the corn side, corn started a little later than soybean, but it's progressing at near normal pace, I would say, because if you look at the numbers, about 54% of the corn was planted by May 10th, up 16% from the last week, but it's still very close to the five-year average.
Emergence for both of those crops running as of May 10, according to that NAS USDA crop progress report, about 10 to 13, 14% ahead of the usual five-year average. There's been a lot of temperature fluctuations, daytime and nighttime, highs and lows. It's meant that there's been some variability in the growing degree accumulations. What impact does it have on the crop emergence, and how should farmers think about it? You could start with soybeans and then move to corn.
Yeah, like you said, you know, it's no surprise to see that if you look at percentage emergence for both crops, they're also ahead of schedule just because, you know, we have more acres planted by this time of the year. So, and as you said, yeah, if you look at temperatures in April, it fluctuated a lot. Roughly across the states, we saw, you know, daytime highs ranging from anywhere between 40 to the 80s. And nighttime lows from the upper 20s to the 50s. And if you think about the way that we calculate growing degree days, right, you take the sum of the highest and the lowest temperature for that day, and then you divided that by two, and then you subtract by the base temperature, which we use 50 for corn and soybean as well. So there is a lot of variation that we saw, and it's very interesting because if you look at the 30-year average, when we look at daily growing degree days accumulation in April, long-term average data, we're only accumulating between 8 to 10 growing degree days. But I have a figure here on the article that shows the daily growing degree days for champagne here on campus. And you can see that we've seen weeks where we're actually accumulating on 20 to 25 growing degree days. That means that, you know, the highest for those days were on the upper 80s. And then, again, if you think about corn and soybean emergence, we usually think about, you know, it might take roughly 110 to 120 growing degree days for that soybean or corn seedling to emerge. But again, if you look at the variation on growing degree days in April, what we usually saw for those fields planted in April, it took about two or even 3 weeks, or even a little bit more than 3 weeks, for that crops to emerge, just because of that variability.
Does it mean that emergence will be ragged and take longer for some plants to come up than others?
Yeah, especially if temperatures go down and stay down after planting. Like I said, you know, like it usually takes 110 to 120 growing degree days for the soybean or corn seedling to emerge. If we're accumulating between 15 and 20 growing degree days per day, that might take a week or so. But then if you're on the single digits, it may take maybe 3 to 4, 5 days more. So it wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of difference in terms of emergence within the field. But as long as, you know, that emergence comes within a week, I think we should be fine. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, having the corn crop to emerge within all the corn crop to emerge within 48 hours, otherwise they become a weed. I also talk a little bit about that rule, which I don't really agree. But again, if you think about, you know, the conditions in April, again, I don't think we had many fields where all of the seeds emerged within 48 hours. So it would be interesting to see how the plants progress and what's the actual impact on yield.
Just to tell me about this emergence allowing either the corn or the soybean crop to be a weed in the field if it comes up slow, and how farmers really ought to assess this. This is something, as you said, you don't really agree with, and that the plants apparently can make up for pretty easily in some cases.
Yeah, and I think that discussion is more on corn than soybeans, because we know soybean plants, they can adapt very well to their environment, right? So if they come up late, they usually stay later, but they should be able to compensate by producing more branches. And then with more branches, you have, you know, more nodes, and then more pods per node. I think the discussion is more on the corn side, because corn doesn't compensate very well, right? So I think the idea is that the plants that emerge a little later, they will stay behind. And I don't know why they say weed, because to me, if you look at the definition, weed is an unwanted plant that are competing for resources, and then it's going to reduce yield. Most of the time, what we've seen in the field is that, you know, the later emerging corn crops, they usually stay behind because they're not very competitive, but they're not reducing yields of the neighboring plants. they may produce a smaller ear, but that's still contributing to the overall yield. And depending on the conditions, if you have a very good conditions, the bigger plants may even compensate by putting larger ears. So I think that idea of the later emerging becoming weeds is kind of, you know, kind of thinking about yield potential, if you will. But I don't necessarily agree with the term weeds.
Finally, how is it that you would term the beginning of this growing season for corn and soybeans in the state of Illinois? How did the early planting through mid-May go?
Planting progress is at very good conditions. I think we overall, we are off to a good start. There were a few instances that I've heard from fields that were planted in late March or early April that got some injury, frost injury, when the first frost came around April 20th. I've heard reports of some fields being replanted, but some other fields of stands were able to recover, and I don't think they were warrant any replanting. And, you know, just thinking ahead, like I said early in the beginning, as we move into mid-May now, a lot of people are starting to get anxious by planting because, you know, as we delay planting, we're kind of minimizing yield potential. So I also have another figure in the article showing our corn yield response to planting data sets. It's a very good data set. We've been running planting date studies across many sites in central and northern Illinois since 2007 with my predecessor, Dr. Emerson Afsiger. And then when I joined here and back in 3 years ago, I kind of kept continued doing some of that work. So we have 45 trials between 2007 and 2025. And if you look at the yield responses, it's kind of follow a quadratic response. Usually what we see for corn is yields being maximized anytime we plant between mid and late April. And then of course, as we move into May, yield losses starting to happen, but they don't start to increase rapidly until after mid-May. So again, I think this week, it should be very dry. Dry enough in a lot of places that a lot of planting will happen. Just driving around Champaign County here yesterday, I saw a lot of farmers out in the field too, kind of planting.
Hey, thank you much, Giovanni. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Don, thanks for having me again.
That is Giovanni Prezafontes. He is an agronomist with University of Illinois Extension and in the Department of Crop Sciences located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may find his article on crop progress and planting for the 2026 growing season on the Crop Central website. Look for it freely at willag.org. Let's check in on the growing conditions in North America. We're joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Shall we begin in the Corn Belt across the Midwest? They're hoping for a bit more heat. Can you tell me about that and the rainfall that will come along with it, maybe?
Yeah, we're definitely moving in the right direction to get that heat. As we go forward to the next couple of days, it should definitely warm up. And I don't think anybody's going to complain about it for too long. We still are expecting 50 and 60 degree temperatures in the eastern Midwest today. But come about 2.5, maybe 3 days from now, those temperatures should be pushing in the 80s. So that'll be a nice bit of break for Michigan and Indiana, Ohio. Farther to the west, it's going to heat up already probably this afternoon on the western fringe of the corn and soybean producing areas, but it's really going to be Friday and Saturday that the western corn belt gets warmest. We'll see 80s and perhaps even a few lower 90s occurring. And that, like I said, will spread across the entire Midwest as we go into the weekend. And I don't think we're going to see a serious amount of relief from the heat right off the bat. But as we get towards the first part of next week, the northwestern Corn Belt will probably see a little bit of cooling. And eventually it'll spread through the rest of the region. We will come back down to some 60 and 70 degree temperatures. There's quite a cold air mass coming in from the northwest. So that will stimulate rain and thunderstorm activity. activity, and we'll probably run into some severe weather when that evolution takes place, so be prepared for that. That always means some locally heavy rain along with the hail and damaging wind potential. And so when the cooler air comes in, it will get kind of rough out there for a little while, but it'll get more stable as we get into the heart of next week.
USDA earlier in the week gave us what we already knew mostly about the hard red winter wheat crop in Kansas, parts of Colorado, that it's in rough condition. That heat that is helping out in the Corn Belt, probably not the best of things there. Can you tell me about things across those regions?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is going to be a lot warmer there a lot sooner, and it's going to last for 4 or 5 days. And we are talking about temperatures that will get pretty high into the 80s and certainly across the 90s for much of hard red winter wheat country. And what it's interesting most about this is that it's not just the heat. We are also going to have very low humidity in the afternoons. And that is going to come with wind as well. So if the crop isn't already hurt, it's going to be, there's going to be some desiccation that may take place here if we can't get some better rain to occur. The good news, I guess, if there is any for those folks out that way, is that when this cooler air does drop into the region, it will bring with it a chance for thunderstorms, and that will hopefully bring a little relief. But as of this moment, I don't think the High Plains region is going to see much relief, and so the crop will continue to, unfortunately, deteriorate in unirrigated fields out that way.
One last place we to check in on North America, in Canada, and I know that's a broad space. So what should we discuss there today?
Yeah, in Canada, it's about the prairies. Over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of chatter out there about how dry it continues to be in the southwestern part of the prairies. And then we've got flooding that's going on in the northeastern part of the prairies. And that's a big concern because, that's not an area that gets real warm real fast necessarily. And so we've got a lot of drying to do in the Northeast. Well, we've got about a day and a half left of drier weather, and then they're going to go into a fairly frequent precipitation pattern and much cooler temperatures, too. And so there's a pretty good consensus out there right now that those northeastern parts of Canada's prairies, including northeast half of Saskatchewan and probably northern and central Manitoba, will probably be quite chilly and probably not be in the fields until early June. And so that could be of interest for canola and wheat producers. They're, in the meantime, the southwestern prairies, where it's been dry, they are expected to get a little bit of moisture over the next week. And I think there'll be a lot of celebration for that, maybe improved planting and emergence conditions coming up for those folks. But it will get cool, though. And they are going to see some more frost and freezes across the prairies, unfortunately.
Hey, thanks much, Drew.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, online on demand at willag.org. The theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. You have a great afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.